Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're covering Season 1, Episode 4, King of the Narrow Sea. Aaron, you've seen it a few times now, presumably. What'd you think?
This might be my new favorite episode. Because absent a big battle, which I feel like Game of Thrones, like usually when you have a big battle episode, that kind of is it. That takes front and center. Outside of like a battle, although we did have an interesting duel that was kind of sort of off screen, but kind of sort of in the middle of the screen. It did kind of everything that you want a Game of Thrones universe project to do. It's got the intrigue. It's got the sex. It's got the complicated moral and ethical dilemmas. And the more I watched it, the more I saw people discussing elements of, you know, Allison's relationship with Viserys, Rhaenyra's relationship with Daemon, Rhaenyra's relationship with Sir Criston Cole. The more I'm like, this is a pretty cleverly constructed show that, like, there's this much debate and discourse happening among the major characters and the major action. And like, again, it feels very realistic from the relationships, you know, they're growing, well, not growing, but growing apart between Rhaenyra and Alicent. And, you know, I thought it was great to see Viserys happy for, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes of a House of the Dragon episode. I really enjoyed it. How about yourself?
Yeah, me too. I think that's absolutely right. This is a pretty complex episode and pretty, there's a lot of room for debate on people's feelings on matters and people's motivations. And I think that's what's super exciting about it. I will say I felt more strongly that way until I went and I mistakenly watched or, you know, unfortunately watched the, I don't know what they call it here, but the inside the episode thing at the end of the episode. And yeah, they spell it all out, right? They spell out pretty much everything that you are questioning in that. And I feel like that did me a disservice because I like that when I'm able to sort of come up with my interpretation of what I just saw on screen and who is scheming and who is not and who's playing straight and where their affections lie. I want to be able to do all that. But when they just come out and say, yeah, Daemon can't get it up here, he's impotent. That kind of ruins the speculation because I'm wondering, like, does Daemon just change his mind midstream here? Is it like he can't go through with it? You know, he had this plan to get back at the king or whatever, and now he just can't do it because Rhaenyra is too innocent and he's feels like too much of an asshole. It didn't seem like that. It seemed like it was just straightforward. He couldn't get it up, so he slapped the wall and left. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about, like, being so privy to the authorial intent here, right? Takes something away, it feels like, sometimes.
Yeah, and we're also free to just tell those people to go fuck themselves because, like, it's not like
sure,
there hasn't
make it
been...
On screen. Yeah, that's the ultimate question.
And these people lie. They're professional liars and storytellers.
Sure.
And
sure.
I've seen in Game of Thrones, certainly, where directors will give an inside interview and be like, oh, this is what we're intending. And it's completely the opposite of what I got from the screen. And whether that's because of their own biases or the fact that they are trying to the trick and deceive. And, you know, like, impotence can mean a lot of things. There's psychological, there's physiological, sure. There's complex mixes of the two. So, like, someone saying that, like, someone's in, you know, cannot perform, there's so many reasons that, like, even then there's, like, a huge cloak to kind of hide motivations and whatnot behind. So, like, But I agree. I don't know that these pithy 5-6 minute things after every episode does much but shut down valid discussion and debate. You know, I mean, I'm
sure for people who don't like want to get in and mix it up with, you know, the other fans and try and figure out what's happening, they probably really enjoy that stuff, right?
Yeah, it gives them clarity. The fan that only watches official HBO stuff, uh-huh, doesn't listen to podcasts, doesn't get on YouTube or subreddits or forums or Discords. Yeah, those are probably pitched just right for those type of uh-huh people.
No, I think that's totally valid. I don't.
That's not a bad type of person to be.
Experience, yeah, that's great.
I mean, I won't say it's healthy to spend 20 plus hours each week obsessing over House of the Dragon.
Yeah,
it's kind of lucrative in my case, which is why I do it. But like, yeah, I'm not going to say that those fucking idiots are just watching an hour and in a 5 minute post show and going on with their lives. What a bunch of suckers! But
yeah, for sure. But for me, it was a little disappointing to hear it spelled out so black and white. But I do still have a lot of questions, you know, and I think this episode is better than being boiled down to a 5 minute interview with the creators. So we'll talk about it when we get to those scenes. But yes, I think on second watch, it was more of everything I liked about it on first watch.
Do you listen to the official podcast?
I do not.
So they had a really interesting interview with the guy that plays Sir Criston Cole. I haven't learned his actor's name yet. And they talk about the fact that this is the first House of Dragon episode directed by a woman, Claire Kilner. She's going to direct the next episode as well as the penultimate episode this season. And, you know, this is the first season of any kind of Game of Thrones show, maybe season 8, where they have, you know, HBO's really mandated these intimacy coordinators to make sure that everybody's input mm-hmm is heard and that no one's pressured to do anything wild. And like, it felt like that led, in the case of the sex scene between Criston Cole and Rhaenyra, in like really fruitful directions, because they were like talking mm-hmm about how awkward it is for both of them and some of that awkwardness coming into like just what a process it is to disrobe a Kingsguard. And, you know, that there's like it's awkward, but there's also this kind of like buildup and tension and anticipation. And it seems like the actor's input kind of made that into a more emotionally resonant scene. I, you know, we're going to talk about, because these things are all juxtaposed intentionally, just like the jousting was juxtaposed with the terrible, you know, short-lived birth of of Balin mm-hmm there. They're intentionally juxtaposing Alicent with Viserys, with Rhaenyra and her two lovers here. And I think it's, like I said, really interesting to analyze what all is going on there
for sure. That's good stuff. That's what I've come to the Game of Thrones universe for, and it feels like they're nailing it.
Yeah, smut, that's what we're here for. Sure. we're here for that mushroom flavor.
I mean, I'm not here for that, but also I'm here for the intrigue.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I guess the first time I was just kind of taken aback by how mushroomy it was. But then when I started rewatching and I reread the relevant passages in Fire and Blood, and I just came away like, I'm really amazed at how well they're blending the various threads of the stories that, like, you know, Septon Eustace says this and Mushroom says this and the Maester of this says this. Like, they're really kind of trying to find, like, why would an historic, it's not just this historical account is right, but like, did these things come from nothing? Mm-hmm. And like, you see that Rhaenyra like denies anything happened, and Daemon kind of like doesn't deny anything happens. And if you are a court, you know, a courtier, and you're just hanging about and you're hearing whispers, how would that be written down in a history book 200 years after the fact? I just feel like they're fucking nailing that aspect of it. And that's one of the things I'm most excited, because I was wondering how, whether they would just be like a choose your own adventure. Do you want things to be hot and horny? Do you want things to be stuffy and staid? Do you want things to be... No, it's kind of like successfully blending, definitely leaning the one direction or other episode by episode. But you understand why people said the things they did and what sources that the Maester was quoting in Fire and Blood. And it's been really entertaining as a person that's into the lore and into the source material to see them just breathe life into it.
Nice. There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
This episode is brought to you by Rakuten. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Samsung, Expedia, and Sephora. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
And now, back to Hot D. All right. Well, I think it's about time we got into the recap. What do you say?
Let's tackle the King of the Narrow Sea.
All right. We start off with lords from across the kingdoms attempting to impress Rhaenyra in order to win her hand in marriage. She does not believe any of them are worthy matches.
This is something that they have adapted from the books. There's mention that Rhaenyra takes this kind of tour around the kingdom. And they even cite that there was a duel that broke out over her favor between these the lords of the Blackwoods and the Brackens, which we see depicted here. They did some weird blending of set and setting. Like, these are all river lords. They're sitting in the Stormlands seat of power, Storm's End. This is Boros Baratheon. You saw him request the queen who never was his favor in the opening tourney.
Is that who this guy is sitting next to her whispering?
Yeah.
In her ear?
Yeah. Okay. He's the lord of
Baratheon, but
yeah, he's the lord of Storm's End. But yet these are all the Riverlands lords that are courting her. And when she dashes out after the violence breaks and she's like, I'm done swiping left on all these fuckers. They mentioned that they're going to go their next stop was Bitterbridge, which is a seat in the Reach. So it's like it seems like they're going geographically centered areas that built. So like I wasn't sure, but it felt like. This was essentially a scene to kind of sum up all those different paragraphs of this courtship. You know, it's like she's considering river lords in the Stormlands, and her next stop is the Reach. That's literally half of the Seven Kingdoms right there.
right. Yeah, she's doing a tour. That explains the tour. You know, we were wondering, okay, is this Dragonstone or what? But if it was Dragonstone, everybody's coming to her. She's out there doing the tour.
It also explains, I think, early, because I didn't get this when I was watching at first, the early goings of the episode. Like, Viserys seems a little more hostile to Rhaenyra than you would suspect. And I think it's because he's kind of peeved. He's pleased with what's going on with Daemon, but he's also peeved that she has essentially blown up her own, you know, the thing that she asked for. At least let me choose my own hand. And she's not really taking it serious. Like, Boros points out that, like, you are kind, your royal tongue is cashing or is writing checks that your royal ass cannot cash. Like, you are offending many powerful lords just with your dismissive and shit. Like, you can think whatever you want, but, like, you know, to make fun of these lords for being too old, for being too young, for being too wet, like, it's, you know, you're, and then to just bounce on half of them. I question Rhaenyra's readiness as a politician is all I'm saying.
Oh, totally.
And you wonder how, like, you know, she's got this acerbic wit from, I guess, Daemon, how that's going to mix when she has to, like, you know, handle matters of state later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's doing the whole bachelorette thing here.
Do you want to know some?
I do still, even after this episode, wonder, you know, who's going to get the rose, right? Like, Kristen Cole seems like a very good match, although the oath pretty much prevents any of that. So,
do you think the rose might be held by many hands at some point?
Many marriages, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we're talking. So you're okay. We're talking about the official, lawfully married aspect of it. I thought we were talking about the hands on the stem of the rose, perhaps. But
oh no, the person with the roses is the winner, right? I don't know. I don't watch that show.
Yeah.
Does the rose change hands frequently? I don't know.
I thought that the rose was, fuck it. I honestly couldn't tell you. Do they start off with a bunch of roses and you have to turn your rose in?
Each contestant gets a rose and
turning
the
rose,
clippers.
He eats it right in front of her and then she weeps and she's thrown out of the show. I think that's pretty much how it happens. Sure. And I'll not be told otherwise.
Here's the thing about the, this duel that breaks out. I love it. Because who did you say this guy was? Bracken?
So the
real mouthy one.
The Blackwood is the kid. Uh-huh. And the Bracken is the kind of like older kid bully.
The mouthy one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he decides to fight this kid, which can only go wrong, right? There's no good outcome when you decide to fight a child. You either win, and congratulations, dude! You just beat a child.
Yeah, you ran that cold. You ran that cold steel through a 12-year-old's belly. Congrats! Yeah.
Or you lose and you're dead.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Double unimpressive.
Yeah, and the 12-year-old ran his cold steel through your belly. Mm-hmm. Did you? So you want to hear some behind the scenes?
Yeah.
This Blackwoods and Bracken is one of the oldest feuds in the Seven Kingdoms. It dates back to at least the Andal invasion. You'll recall Westeros was originally settled by the First Men. Mm-hmm. Then some thousands of years later, it was partially conquered up to the neck by the Andals. That was 4,000 years ago. These houses have been feuding to the extent that they don't even remember why. Like, they both say that the other was the illegitimate liege lord that stole the seat from each other. Neither of them are the ruler of, obviously, House Tully is ruling the Riverlands now. And this is just kind of a nod and a wink, because like, this is something this is something I really admire about Martin, is like, this world is fucking populated. Like, the castle that the old Dondarrion guy is mentioning, Blackhaven, you know, he's talking about it having a moat, you know, this deep, dry moat in the World of Ice and Fire. It's mentioned that this castle's moat is so deep, it's said to be bottomless. Some people think it's bottomless. Hmm. And this was the castle where Sir Barristan the Bold got his start. He borrowed a mismatched set of armor at 10 years old and entered the tourney as a mystery knight and started his career. Like, all these locations have like rich history to them. Even minor ones like the house seat of the Dondarrions, who gives a fuck? But Martin is like, spent a lot of time with the map and thinking about like, oh yeah, here in 297 AC, that it's kind of crazy. And this feud going back is something else, because like, every once in a while you'll see in Fire and Blood or the World of Ice and Fire, just out of nowhere, the Brackens and Blackwoods are at each other's throat.
Uh-huh. It's wild to me that in a world where houses keep 4,000-year-old grudges alive, that Viserys would wonder, how can Lord Corlys still be salty with me? My God, it's been 3 years.
Yeah, you wonder if that's like self-interested, you know, kind of like, sure. Yeah, sure, there are other houses to get, but we're Valyrians, man. We should get over this shit. Yeah,
Sure.
It's also like, you know, I think you're supposed to understand this is more like Rhaenys's commentary in the first episode, that like, you've got all these young lords who've never been able to distinguish themselves in battle, and here they're looking to, you know, get a fine Targaryen princess, and if not, then maybe bloodied in combat. They're just spoiling for a fight.
Well, maybe attend the next tourney, because it gets pretty rowdy there.
Yeah.
All right, we go on a ride back to King's Landing, where Daemon buzzes Rhaenyra's tower on Caraxes. not the last time he'll buzz her tower in this episode.
Heyo.
I did not realize that a dragon wing flap was so powerful. Holy cow, it nearly capsizes this boat.
I mean, I was wondering that too. But on the other hand, like, those dragon wings are about the size of the ship sails, and those sails are designed to catch wind. To and it's not like it tipped. It's not like it capsized it, but it did, you know, knock people down. It gave Rhaenyra a good knock on the head. It'd be funny if he killed her. Like, what? Yeah, imagine when she shows up and Viserys, you know, like the boat shows up and Daemon's already into is like, oh, I'm giving you this crown, brother, and Viserys is about to take him back, and you know, and the one of the Kingsguard runs in, is like, my God, Caraxes just buzzed her con and killed Princess Rhaenyra. Like, Jesus, Daemon. Mm-hmm. What an asshole.
So,
but Rhaenyra also likes it. That's the other thing. It's like she likes the bad boy aspect of her uncle Daemon.
Oh yeah, for sure. We go to Daemon returning victorious as the king of the Narrow Sea, but he does acknowledge to the king that there is only one true king, and Viserys congratulates him on his victory, and the brothers become friends again. You love to see it.
Yeah, this is like literally from the books, talking about the whole realm applauding the two brothers reuniting, and kind of like you can almost feel an audible like a sigh of relief, like, oh, thank God, we're not going to have a Targaryen civil war.
Right.
But yeah, I thought this was played perfect. I love Daemon swaggering up to the Kingsguard and like letting them put the point of their swords right to his chest. Mm-hmm. And the provocation of him wearing the crown that he turns into this courtly, you know, because he gets on the one knee and offers the crown to his true king, and just how tickled Viserys and relieved, like he's genuinely moved and relieved that this is happening.
I don't think he wants to have to fight Daemon here.
What did you think about Rhaenyra, the way she was trying to kind of like muscle in?
Oh, she's like looking around for Daemon, you know, she's excited that her uncle is back.
It's really kind of notice me, senpai type of that she's going for here. Just kind of like, come on, uncle, look over here. I got your necklace on, you know, ignoring her, which makes me wonder, did he not see her, or is this like, because that's, despite what they say on the behind the scenes, I've seen this episode three times now, and I wonder how much of a deliberate game he's playing, and how much of this is just him kind of being an oversized boy figuring shit out for himself.
Yeah, it's a good question that I'm sure we'll get deeper into as the episode goes. There's a lot of little stuff here that I like, you know, just the fact that Viserys like takes his sword and sort of, you know, eyes it for a second and is like clutching it through the entire scene. I don't know if this is like part of a ceremonial performance here, or if this is more like, I might need this sword. I'm going to really hold on to this sword during this ceremony.
Well, so like there's like this, I don't know if they're deliberately going in there, but there's like this custom in Westeros that like if a lord greets you with a sword in his lap, then that's like a naked threat. If the sword's bared, it's like a super threat.
Sure.
And here, like standing in front of the sword with the like sword in front of you, seems like it was like a deliberate kind of like, I am the fucking throne, and you know, I'm surrounded here in my power, and you better watch it, Daemon. Mm-hmm. But also the way that Viserys is kind of using Blackfyre. This is, again, the ancestral Valyrian's sword that carried by Aegon the Conqueror. He's using it like a cane. Like, I think you're really supposed to understand that maybe this king's getting a little frail. All these nicks and wounds are adding up.
And I've seen it pointed out that he does not sit on the throne anymore.
Yes. There's several scenes where he entertains people in the... now I think the first scene is like, you're supposed to understand that this is a surprise visit, and everyone's kind of like, you know, like all the lords at court and the ladies at court are kind of filing in. They're, you know, this isn't official. Like, so maybe, and then the other scene where he's just essentially kicking Daemon's ass. I don't know if we can draw too much from this, but it also wouldn't surprise me if he's trying to keep from sitting on that as much as possible because it keeps biting him.
Yeah, for sure. There's another little moment that I love in this when Daemon takes what I assume is the crab feeder's weapon, right? And throws it on the floor and says, add it to the chair. which
badass.
Is in itself disrespectful, I thought. It's a throne, man. It's not a chair. He uses a very diminutive term for the king's seat of power.
Yeah. It'd have been funny if he said high chair, because that also would have been accurate.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that that's the Warhammer that the crab feeder was using to nail dudes.
I think so.
To the beach.
You don't get a good look at it. You get
we never got to see them. Yeah, it. Like I wonder if they shot that duel, because like the way
they
zoomed in on that hammer, I think it's supposed to look at this iconic thing. You're supposed to, but I think you can assume and infer, but they didn't make that hammer as iconic as some weapons we've seen in Game of Thrones for sure.
Sure.
What did you think of Daemon's haircut? Is he more or less dreamy now that he has a establishment haircut? I mean, he could show up at Sterling Cooper as a young ad exec and get hired off the spot with that haircut. You could set your watch by that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could get a little pomade in there or something. Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I like it. I think it certainly, as somebody who was trying to grow their hair out, got it about that long. I got to say, any longer, and it's just unruly. It's so annoying.
Thinking, was it so matted with blood that he just like, oh, God, it's like when you get too much bubble gum in your hair and your mom just like gets at the buzz. You know, it's like, I've tried the peanut butter. I've tried the vegetable oil. It's time for the clippers. You know, he just couldn't get all that crab food out of his hair.
Yeah, he's trying to avoid grayscale. He's like, this is all covered in grayscale blood. Get it off me.
It's like lice. Yeah, just like, you know what? Shave it all off. I don't want to take chances.
All right, let's go over to Viserys and Daemon reminiscing and making the women feel unwanted. So they go off and they sit together and talk, Rhaenyra and Alicent, and they bond over their very similar lots in life.
Yeah, do you like Alicent reminds me, I think you're supposed to think of Alicent a lot as Sansa, and early Sansa was all about this life. She was all about finding her lord husband and getting married and having children and making him happy and being the lady at court. And oh, my God, it'll be all my dreams. And then you see Alicent's been through 3 years, but like no one takes her seriously. You know, like, I don't think she's even in the tapestries. This is something that she was keeping going from the previous Targaryen regime. And she's like, you know, I got these. And Viserys, like, puts her down deliberately in front of her brother to score points. Like, fucking tapestries. Get out of here, the goddamn tapestries.
Laughing in her face like that. That's real shitty. Also, I have to imagine that Daemon might be into these tapestries if they're the ones that are hanging in her chambers. And I think actually, that's in Viserys' chambers too. Like, they're hanging everywhere in this castle.
Yeah, it's all the erotic tapestries. I think Daemon would be super interesting. Find them super interesting. And Viserys is just being shitty to his child bride.
Yeah, it sucks.
And like, it makes sense that he's a little frosty to Rhaenyra, because again, you know, she's not even supposed to be here. She's supposed to be on her way to another bachelorette show. But yeah, it just feels like they really make this, They really sell this with the conversation that Rhaenyra and Alicent have, where Alicent or Rhaenyra essentially puts her foot in her mouth. It's like Alicent did last episode about the childbearing, with like, man, I do not want to be imprisoned in some castle just punching out airs like, you know, movie tickets. And Alicent's like, oh, you mean like me? And that scene that we're going to get to here in a minute, where Alicent is trapped with a screaming child, no one there to help her. Which, Jesus, shouldn't you have literally an army of people to be just like, take this screaming whelp, you know? But the way those windows, we point this out in instant take, that like they're very much like prison bars, and she is here just utterly alone, and when she's not alone, she's being used.
Yeah, no, I really love this conversation. It's a moment where both of them realize that they are more similar. They're in more similar situations than they want to acknowledge. Especially Rhaenyra, right? Like, she thinks she's somehow different. She thinks Alicent like made a stupid choice and she's angry at her for it, but then realizes, oh, actually she didn't have much of a choice.
Yeah.
Just like I don't have much of a choice. She finally gets Alicent's position, and that's what like reconnects them. And I just felt
she says how few friends she has, because like, you know, when she was the Lady Alicent, you know, she had Rhaenyra and she had other friends at court. But now that she's the queen, there's this remove, you know, because she has got real power. And she's no longer just a person anymore. And as a young girl, that transition's been tough. And she's starting to have doubts of like, hey, maybe all this courtly love is bullshit. And maybe I did want something more. Or I at least wanted a husband that respected and paid attention to me.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go over to Rhaenyra approaching Daemon in the Godswood to figure out why he's here. And he gives a coy answer. And then they talk about various subjects from marriage to sex to death to fear. They definitely have something going on. If I wasn't picking up on it before, and I was not, then this scene, you can't miss it.
Yeah, and I wonder, because like Daemon's standing there in the Godswood, which is interesting. I wouldn't think a person like him would be very spiritual, and his eyes are closed, and he's like basking in the warmth of the sun. Mm-hmm. And he says he's here for the comforts of home, which Rhaenyra immediately calls bullshit on. It's like, you've never been comfortable here. Get out.
I feel like he's talking about her.
But is he back for her, or is this something that like hatches in this scene? Like the idea of like, oh, wow, she doesn't understand anything about sex and this whole deal. And she thinks it's this and I'm going to teach her. And she's kind of feisty and I like that. And she's a Targaryen and I like that. I'm an old school Targaryen. I'm not above fucking a niece or two. I don't know, because this plan, like I think Allison gets it right later that it is this kind of like diminishes Viserys, but like I'm not sure what it gains Daemon, and like surely Daemon didn't think that Viserys would be cool with this particular, like maybe if he had come and said, you know, brother, you said I could have anything in the kingdom. Turns out I really like your daughter, my niece. And, you know, we're Targaryen. I know what you're going to say. I got another one. But like, you know, we're all Targaryen. Like but he just goes and fucking does it. And in a way that would embarrass, you know, everyone at court. I just wondered.
Yeah, no, I think it's right to wonder, like, does he plan this from the start, or is this something that he kind of discovers along the way here? I don't know. It's a real nuanced episode. I like that.
Especially when he says, you know, because she's like, yeah, you know, the thing is like, I could be pushed into childbirth until I die from it. Like my mom, she's got real trauma there. And Daemon's like, well, you can't live your life in fear. You'll miss the best parts. And this is a guy who knows all about that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a guy who, rather than be humiliated by his brother's aid and relief, went and, you know, bonsai charged the crab feeder's army and almost killed him, got himself killed, but also man, it's like, he's just a weirdo, because he did all this stuff ostensibly to kind of like get a fame and glory and renown and maybe get back into the Targaryen's good graces. And he goes back to court and that very evening makes an ass of everything. So like he wants these boons, but then he treats them lightly.
Yeah, I don't know. This all comes back to, like, I feel that Daemon is a child in so many respects. And one of those is he's just kind of angry that his brother gets all the attention. Feels like what it is. Like, you know, he's the king. And what am I ever going to do to stand out, especially that I'm no longer the heir? I'm not even in line for anything here. Yeah, this second son thing is really eating away at him. And so now he's just antagonizing his brother.
Yeah. He's super fun, though. Like, I don't think that Game of Thrones has often had just really, like, outright villains that have been this enjoyable to watch. Like, maybe Littlefinger at the apex of his scheming before he kind of got bogged down in the Sansa plot.
Yeah.
Varys, although Varys, I would never say, was, like, a villain. He was always ambiguous and gray. Mm-hmm. But Daemon is just like, yeah, man, he just kills people and commits terrible war crimes and tries to deflower his niece. And just like he's having a lot of fun doing it, you know?
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that.
No, it is enjoyable to watch for sure. So the king and his council fret over what to do about Lord Corlys's occupation of the Stepstones and his plan to wed his daughter to the Sea Lord of Braavos, which is one of the free cities that they're always talking about.
Yeah. this is, you know, this is momentous because it's like Westeros is always worried about Essos. It's a larger, more powerful, richer continent that could come in and probably if it would ever, if ever then the three cities could unite, come over and put the kibosh on everything they're doing in Westeros. Mm-hmm. So it is a bit of a threat for Corlys to marry the other into the other huge sea power of Essos. And yeah. like, you know, he's like, their fleets combined, we got nothing, you know, we got our dragons and that's it. Yeah, and we need our own. Yeah, we need to get our own marriage pact going. We need to get in on this or it's going to be a bad political situation.
Which I do wonder, you know, they go to Corlys with this naked political arrangement. Is he going to be receptive to that? Or is he going to see it for what it is and realize that this is because Viserys is scared of the growing power that he's got? Is I don't know if he's going to be receptive,
but it's still putting your firstborn on the, you know,
I know.
It's not on the Iron Throne you know, like you are the king regent. Yeah. Or the king consort, whatever. I don't know. Actually, I wonder because like obviously the king is the king and the queen is the queen. But like, do they have the thing like, is he a prince consort or what would they actually call him? And in the way Westeros is, you know, you've got a powerful lord from a powerful, wealthy family and he's got the ear of the monarch. That's pretty damn. That's the reason they don't that no one wants Daemon to marry Rhaenyra, too, is like, oh, my God, you know, this is because, you know, he's essentially one step away from the throne. But it's also like I'm pretty sure that like obviously Laenor and Rhaenyra's children would be first in line. It's not like Laenor himself could ever sit the throne unless you had a situation where Rhaenyra would die while the kids are minor children. Then he'd probably be the king regent. But still, that's got to be a pretty big boon for a guy like Corlys. I think he sees his way through that. Yeah,
probably. But we'll find out.
Oh, also, it's kind of cool to see Rhaenyra is on the small council. She got her marble and everything. I don't know what position she's holding, but, you know, she's not doing much yet. But she's actually stopped pouring wine and she's popping marbles now. There's still lots of hot D to talk about. We'll be back right after the break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our Premium Club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
And now, back to Hot D.
All right, let's go very quickly over to Allison, who tries to comfort her crying daughter.
She's in mom jail. Everybody else is going to their rooms to carve their castles or fuck their king's the hunky Kingsguard, and she's just there with a colicky baby in mom jail.
And that evening, Rhaenyra enters her chambers where she finds some peasant clothes and a note with a map waiting for her. She puts on the rags and sneaks out of her chambers through a secret passage where she finds Daemon waiting to take her to what I'm going to call lowborn Mardi Gras. I don't know if this is just a Tuesday night for them. If this is just
or what slutty
Ren
Fair.
Sure.
Or just
sure.
That's just
Ren Fair. Yeah. But it's a party in the streets, man.
It really is. Like I wrote in my notes that she's exposed to all manner of strange drinks, shows, and even witchcraft. We got an eyeless witch wanting to foretell her death. You got people breathing fire. You got people handling fire. One dude, I don't know if that guy's going to use his hands again. They're just like, this is one night only. I'm just going to set my hands in fire and cackle like a maniac. But some pyromancy, acrobatics, tightrope walking. It's just, man, these streets of silk or wherever that I think that we're supposed to be at, Flea Bottom, it does seem like a real party. Reminds
me
of the
Deuce.
And
also the dark side too, right? Like people are getting mugged and stabbed and stolen from and
sure. Lots of innocence being lost here, never to be found again. Yeah, it's definitely just like every kind of adult red light district. It's got its good things and it's got its bad things.
For sure. I have to know. So the Red Keep is obviously still a thing in Game of Thrones. We see a lot. Do you have any guess as to whose room this might be and as to whether or not they knew about the secret passages? Because I don't recall them ever being used.
Right. So it's interesting because the lore behind this is that Maegor the Cruel had the Red Keep built. You know, Aegon had minor fortifications and whatnot. You know, when he was king, like the King's Landing began literally as like a wood palisade, you know, just like an old frontier town with like an egg. They called the Aegon Fort. It was just a wooden fort that he built on top of the tallest hill in King's Landing. And, you know, they're always wanted, you know, like we need a palace that's going to be grand enough for the Targaryens. And Maegor is the one that kind of made that happen. And he wanted all these secret passages so he could go anywhere, any place, unseen, do whatever he wanted. And as soon as the thing was built, he invited all the designers to a big feast, and then he Ozymandias'd them. He killed them all. So it's unclear, and it seems that Maegor took a lot of those secrets to the grave with him. It's unclear how someone like Daemon or later on Varys would uncover these secrets. But it's an interesting thing because like a lot of people have said that, like, you know, Daemon on the Iron Throne would be Maegor reborn. He's got all the secrets of Maegor at his fingertips. I thought that was an interesting way to connect him back to this other kind of evil, diabolical king.
Nice.
But it's not clear to me how he would uncover. Like, I'm just guessing kind of mischievous, kind of adventurous. You know, he's just kind of creeping around, pulling on various sconces and tapping on various, you know, mantles. And, you know, he's just got just mapped out as much as he can.
Yeah. So I guess these secrets are going to, like, I don't know if Rhaenyra dies, assuming she eventually dies at some point. But, like, are these secrets going to die with her? Because she knows about him now.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, there was, you'll recall, there's a lot of speculation in Game of Thrones about, like, oh, Tyrion knows all these secret tunnels into the Red Keep that might factor into Dany invasion, and then fuck all and came then, of yeah. it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe Tyrion did know. Maybe this information makes it out of that room. Viserys bathes, and Allison dismisses the servants and washes his body, which is covered in just open sores. He's in bad shape.
Yeah. It's not good. And you're really seeing the duty in the dutiful wife here, that she, like, the way I read this is she's kind of like taking pity on her husband and, you know, seeing his obvious discomfort with his servants, you know, caring for him in this intimate way. And like he said, they're not especially, their touch isn't especially kind. They're just kind of debriding this wound the way like a fucking nurse would or something. So
abrade it until it goes away.
Which you wonder because like, you know, I guess a lot of like burn victims, they say this, like the doctors and nurses are the devil to you because they're just hurting you. Sure. But like it's important to thoroughly clean those wounds, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if one of the things we're supposed to understand is Allison, by being kind, is kind of maybe killing the king, because like maybe they really need to get in there and give those wounds a proper cleaning, and she's taking over and being like, oh, just a little dab it, you know, they don't want to hurt you too much.
Yeah, maybe. To me, this scene is a lot about Allison's mental state. You're coming off the scene where she's bouncing this baby that's crying in her face, and that's coming off the scene where she had the conversation with Rhaenyra about their lots in life, and how they're, you know, in a prison just meant to pump out offspring. This to me is her going, okay, well, I don't like taking care of these children, but what I do like is the king. I fell in love with the king. And so I'm going to go be kind to the king. And that's going to like refortify my feelings about him and about myself and my life that I've got.
Yeah.
And I think it works momentarily here, but boy, by the end of the episode, obviously she's right back to, oh God, this is my life.
Yeah. And I think that like this conversation Rhaenyra had, cause they haven't talked in a long time. Seems like it's been about 6 to 12 months since last episode. And Rhaenyra has been on this whirlwind marriage tour, and you know, Allison's like happy to get her friend back, and maybe the air is cleared between them. And then Rhaenyra drops this truth bomb. They're like, oh God, whatever happens to me, I hope I don't get your exact fate. And it feels like it really, you see just her noticing like, God, this sucks. Taking care of this screaming child. God, this sucks. Cleaning out my husband's back wounds. God, this sucks. I just had my nightly glass of wine. I'm about to sleep and end this day, and I'm being recalled to his royal presence to service him. Ah, you know, like she's all this stuff is like, with Rhaenyra's words fresh in her mind is really, really driving a lot of discontent with where she's at.
Yeah, and the juxtaposition, like you said, of these scenes with Rhaenyra and Daemon running through lowborn Mardi Gras and her servicing the king are like very much contrasting the lives that they're leading, right? And the freedom or lack thereof that they have, because she's stuck in this now. Like, there's no way out of it for her.
Sure.
But Rhaenyra is like right on the threshold being like, I don't want this, you know. I've seen the fate, and I can choose here.
There's also that kind of like, you know, if you're the first married couple that has kids in your friend group, and your friends are like, hey, we're going downtown to go drinking and dancing and totally. And yeah, like Allison's looking at Rhaenyra sneaking out with her hot uncle to the streets of Silk. And she's like, God damn it. I guess I'll just drink my wine and go to sleep, you know?
Yep. All right. Rhaenyra and Daemon watch a play about the selection of the heir. And it's not flattering to Rhaenyra. She tries to dismiss it, but Daemon reminds her that it's important because the people see it as important. And then she steals something and runs off, inviting him to chase.
I loved Matt Smith's Damon here when she says, oh, the people's wands are no consequence. And his kind of like dark laugh at like how naive that is. And in much the same, like that's Tyrion chuckling at Joffrey's bullshit. Right. And the fact that you mentioned this is not a flattering portrayal of Rhaenyra. It's a super unflattering portrayal of Damon. He's portrayed as a petulant, ineffectual child that's just pouting over the fact that he's completely cut out of the throne. The crowd clearly wants
to see him.
Clearly wants the golden haired Aegon, who, you know, is the legitimate son of the king, and he's got a cock. I love the guy pulling that thing out of his pants.
The rope. Yeah.
The rope cock. God, I need a guide. I need a guide on how to tie that. That would be that's what I'm going to be working on in my next camp. Yeah, it's quite the nut. And I also like, we talk about this show doesn't have a lot of humor, but like I really got a chuckle out of Rhaenyra boo hissing her own, you know, her own portrayal, like, ah, lies, slander, boo, you know, not completely taking it serious. But you can see this is something that would weld them both together, because here's two Targaryens that are kind of like seen. And maybe this is probably new information to Rhaenyra. She's like, well, maybe the lords and all that, but I'm still the realm's delight. Nah, the fucking realm thinks you are a cockless halfwit that would be dangerous and destructive on the Iron Throne. This is probably something that she's not really processed.
Yeah, you're right. And it is like, she's also super sloppy in these scenes. You can see her saying things that other people overhear and take note of. In a very surprised way. Like she says, I wish I was free of the weight of my inheritance for a night. And the vendor looks over at her like, weight of your inheritance? We don't have inheritance. I've never even heard that word mentioned here.
That's
who gets
not
an inheritance?
Small folk talk. What?
Yeah. Right. She's just super sloppy. And then obviously that leads to her getting spied there later. But
also Damon is plying her with strong drink. You know, he pulls out a Targaryen bottle of what the fuck when she's probably the strongest she's ever drank is, you know, wine from the Dornish wine or whatnot. So, yeah, I wonder how much of that was in the calculus, too.
Probably plenty. All right, let's go. Speaking of drinking, over to Allison, who drinks some tea and gets ready for bed. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, they're contrasting the lives they're leading here.
Like many moms trying to break out of a mom jail, she turns to the bottle as her only respite.
Damon chases Rhaenyra through the streets of King's Landing, eventually catching up to her after she runs into Sir Harwin Strong.
Uh-oh. I wondered if you'd recognize him in the darkness.
Well, she says his name, so it was pretty easy. She says Sir Harwin.
Oh, did she? Oh, yeah. Shit, because I actually, man, I missed that. Because like on the second watch through, I'm like, I think that's
it totally is, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the sole guy who was turned on and aroused by her coming back to camp covered in boar guts and blood. Mm-hmm. Sir Harwin, Breakbone Strong. It's interesting to see him in the Kingsguard because the Fire and Blood alludes to him being made an officer of the King's, or not the Kingsguard, of the City Watch.
Okay.
The gold cloaks. Okay. So that's kind of what he's doing in this era. And, you know, fortunately recognizes her. So, you know, she's not going to get drug off to the black cells, which would be embarrassing for everybody.
I mean, there are so many people recognizing her and spotting her here. Like so many people know that she was out. I don't know if this matters. Here's the thing. Like Sir Harwin spots her. You know, she's been spied on by Missaria, but none of this matters, right? Because eventually she admits to it. It's not like this is the only way in this that this could matter is if word spreads beyond the family here. If Sir Harwin goes and talks with some other lord because they're considering, you know, putting their rose in the running for her hand in marriage.
Yeah.
And word about this thing with Damon gets out. Through him or Missaria, that could be a problem.
Someone pointed out, I think it might have been Kim Renfro, pointed out that like at some point Damon pulls her disguise is like she's disguised as some boy, and he pulls her hat off, revealing the Targaryen signature platinum blonde hair, almost implying that Damon wanted to be seen. Which takes me back to this being some kind. I don't know that like I would ever give Damon the credit of plotting a plan, but like he's got something that he wants to have. He wants to be seen. He wants to provoke some kind of confrontation. He wants to inject some chaos into the situation. And that seemed plausible to me. And yeah, that act is like he no longer wanted to be undercover at that point.
Yeah, second watch, I was definitely picking up on something that Damon's doing there. Because, yeah, you don't just forget that, oh, we're supposed to not be seen.
Yeah.
And pull both your hats off. All right, Allison's awoken in the night by a servant who says the king has requested her presence, and they have some pretty uninspired sex. Meanwhile, Damon and Rhaenyra end up in a pleasure den where all manner of sexual conduct is on display. Gets them both a little too aroused, and they start making out. But before it can go any further, Damon ends it for whatever reason. Unfortunately, a young boy sees and recognizes them.
Leaves Rhaenyra with the worst case of blue ovaries ever.
Sure.
In King's Landing. This is stuff is, like I said, this is straight from the Tome of Mushroom, you know, that there's this line about the way Mushroom tells it is that Rhaenyra really wanted to fuck Criston Cole, but she was shy because she'd known that he wasn't a virgin and she was. So Damon's like, I can show you how to pleasure not just men, but ladies, too. And it began with kissing lessons, which we see them. And then he took her to the streets of silk and showed her all manner of ways that men and women can pleasure each other. And it's interesting how they blended those kind of approaches in those a single night, you know, essentially, like they did have the passion of kissing. He is like, you know, like this. And she's like, she's not shy about being there. Like, she is feasting mm-hmm. her eyes all about at the coupling and the fucking.
I mean, look at the
fucking
tapestry she lives with. Come on.
And the tap. Yeah, she's like living in the fucking Hugh Hefner's mansion. Mm-hmm. And he gets her all sexed up. He's essentially saying that, like, you know, sex is it's not just for procreation. It's not just for the man's pleasure. It's something that everyone can enjoy and it's great and you should get into it. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's turned. So why does things go bad at the end? The show, the after show said it's a case of impotence. Mm-hmm. But what brought on the impotence? Because I think about his failure to perform with Missaria. What are the things that are in common here? Is it that, like, when Rhaenyra wanted him bad and he was playing the, like, hard to get, that really turned him on, that power? Because it seemed like there was a power exchange happening where Rhaenyra was going to come at the Dany, and maybe that turned him off.
The way they describe it in that after thing, it's a dynamic in power that switch from where he's like. He's arousing Rhaenyra at the beginning, and then she gets way into it more than he thought she would, and then she's like kind of taking the power in the scenario from him, mm-hmm. and that turns him off.
It's a boner killer.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a part of it like that he intended, you know, them to be seen in the streets of silk and for people to whisper, but he didn't really intend for her to be this hot and heavy, and he wasn't ready to
possibly.
Like.
He expected a little more deflower
his niece, you know, that he knew that would be like he's trying to find the middle path between, you know, getting exiled by his brother and getting what he really wants.
I think that's definitely possible. He wants the rumors to spread, right?
Yeah.
And he wants her to seem to the king like she might have been sullied, as they describe it. And so that she'll be worthless to the king, and therefore he'll marry her off to Damon. Yeah, I think that could be part of a plan here.
How much? Okay. Do you think him and Missaria are still an item, or has she completely thrown him over in favor of being the white worm here in King's Landing and being the informant of Otto Hightower? What part of him being rejected and spurned by his other mistress plays a part in his courtship of Rhaenyra here?
I really don't know. I'm not sure if he's even aware of how wrong that's gone. I get no indication on his attitude toward Missaria this episode. Like, he's always been shitty to her, right? Two episodes ago, he was lying about them being getting married and having a child, and
right, just using her as a prop for power.
Yeah, he's always been shitty to her, so I don't know if anything has changed in their relationship.
Yeah.
But clearly Masseria's side of it is going all kinds of wrong. She's like spying on him actively.
Yeah.
For one of his enemies, right? I mean, Otto is definitely not a friend of Damon.
Sure. But it's interesting. I don't think we've talked about it, but this whole scene is being contrasted with Alicent being summoned to the king's chambers late at night to have sex with him. And mm-hmm. she's just laying there. She's just doing the starfish,
staring
the dreaded
the
starfish maneuver, staring at the ceiling. But like at one point he checks in on her, like, are you okay? And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And smiles and like it gets bright. And then as soon as he goes back to the perform, she just like her. She goes dead eyed, slack face. And it's like, yeah, it's like, I think it's like even literally like Viserys or Daemon is voicing over that, like, sex is not just for pleasure for the man, it's pleasure for the woman. And you're seeing Alicent like, yeah, not always, you know, that is not required to get heirs, you know?
Yeah, totally.
But they also show the like the, you know, there's also the subtle power imbalances. Rhaenyra technically is outranking Daemon. She's the heir to the throne, but she's also a very young girl. You know, he's a mighty warrior needing his protection in this environment, it should be said. Mm-hmm. And it's a classic kind of bad boy abuse tactic to get a woman hot and heavy after you and then act like she's some kind of fucking whore and ditch her. And now she's vulnerable and confused. And I thought it's really interesting how they, you know, beyond just the aunt and the uncle and niece of it, and beyond the 30-year-old king, 18-year-old queen aspect of it, there's other layers that they're putting in here, too.
And experienced in the pleasure houses versus
sure.
not. I mean, this is a crash course in sexuality. This is not, I don't care how many tapestries you've seen, there is nothing that prepares you for this as your first sexual experience. So yeah, there are a lot of taboos.
It's a far cry from making out in the backseat of a car on Lover's Lane, right? Being there in the inner perversion of a sex house with your uncle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wild. All right, Rhaenyra returns to her chambers and calls Criston Cole inside. She's determined to fuck someone on this night, so she seduces Criston.
She's hot and bothered, and she's ready to bother somebody else.
I love Criston's expression when he sees Rhaenyra coming through the front door of her chambers again.
Right. Like, what? Huh? Yeah, again, there's not a lot of laugh out loud moments, but there is some wry humor in this episode and him getting completely flummoxed. And then flummoxing for real. I thought this was interesting because there was a lot of discourse on this too, because let me ask you this first of all, before we get to this, you know, a lot of people said, hey, it's nice to see women enjoy sex on Game of Thrones, and truly, sure, it is. I thought this was a really nice shot. This did seem like two young, awkward people believably having sex that maybe they're kind of secretly thinking they shouldn't be having. I thought they did a good job of showing that Sir Criston Cole was not like completely about it, but he also wasn't resistant. And it seemed like he had, by the time it takes him an hour and a half to get out of their armor, by the time he's put aside his snowy white cloak and he was ready to set aside his vows.
Yeah. He has a moment where he's like bent over thinking, am I going to do this? Am I going to do this?
Yeah.
He stands up. Yep. I'm going to do this. And he just goes to it.
So Sir Criston could lose his life for this easily.
Sure.
Certainly lose his position and be disgraced. As far as the power imbalance of it all, can Sir Criston say no to this?
That's my question, man. Where does his oath end and the orders of the princess begin? I really don't know.
Yeah. Like, if an executive assistant just really loves her boss and really finds him sexy, is that still not unseemly? I thought it was, because again, I'm not gonna pearl clutch and be like, oh, Sir Criston Cole was raped here, but like it reminded me a lot of like the early goings of Orange is the New Black, where they had a character who is like this really nice prison guard, and he was like one of the only non pieces of shit correctional officers in the facility, and he had this really nice Latina woman who just got put in jail, and they have this kind of like meet cute courtship in the prison yard, and they end up having sex, and like, wow. A correctional officer having sex with an inmate like, what does consent even mean? And to the show's credit, they explored like the messiness that goes on in that psychologically, physically, you know, there's pregnancy involved. It was a bad scene all around. I don't know that they'll explore that, but like I think it speaks well to the community. People were talking about it, you know, that like, and again, that's where the delicate balances of power, because Sir Criston Cole could absolutely say no. He could be like, you know what, princess, I took a vow. You can't do this. I'm not going to dishonor the king. I'm not going to dishonor you. And like, he probably wouldn't have lost his life, but it is, you know, like he's supposed to obey, you know, he's a sworn shield too, like obey every order. We see Kingsguard take that to extremes, like the Mad King. We love Sir Barristan, but he fucking let Ned Stark's dad get torched in the audience chamber. All kinds of bad, horrific shit that he stood by and did nothing, because that's what he interpreted his oaths. Aerys Okart talks in a novel about how, man, I'm so glad I got sent to Dorne because I don't have to beat Sansa Stark anymore for King Joffrey's pleasure. He's an honorable man, didn't want to do it, but fuck, as King said. I just think it's you know, Rhaenyra, she's a little girl, literally. Sir Criston Cole's twice her size and all this armor, certainly more physically strong, certainly probably more even worldly in that manner. But it's an interesting thing that I think was definitely in that, like his reluctance and his kind of like the persuasion of it. And I also wonder like where this goes from now, because the next morning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When she's being summoned to or summoned by the queen, like you can tell that Sir Criston Cole has no fucking clue what the relational calculus is on this.
Yeah, I don't know how you come back from this. It's intentionally murky, right? Like there are so many dynamics at play here that you're supposed to be confused, because I think Rhaenyra is confused and Criston is confused, and they're just kind of like figuring their way out of what is a weird situation.
And
because you look at Rhaenyra, she's got to be thinking about Daemon in this.
I was just about to say that.
You can almost see it in her face. Like, yeah, she's banging Criston, but she's thinking about Daemon. And they confused the issue even more last episode, where they had Criston and her bonding, because I felt like Criston is the best choice for her. And barring the oath, they might have gotten married themselves. So, like,
and the fact that he's a baseborn bastard that has no, like, yeah, there's in no realm do they ever get together officially. But there's an actually sweet relationship there.
Right.
It's not political, but there's actually something, a mutual attraction. But you mentioned the Daemon of it, like not for nothing. Daemon and Criston Cole are forming to be arch rivals, you know.
And that's what I love about it, because it's not just like, oh, how do they navigate this from a legal and political standpoint, but from a guy who I think wants Rhaenyra, Daemon, and a guy who got Rhaenyra, Criston. In the ways that I think Daemon wants Rhaenyra, that's going to be an extra, you know, bit, especially with a guy as petty and angry as Daemon. I mean, you look at the way he's responding to Viserys here and antagonizing him. Yeah, Criston is going to be on that list now. If he wasn't before, he's going to be number one with a bullet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that Daemon laughs off this provocation like he did on the bridge to Dragonstone.
And it's not his fault, right? Like, I mean, sure, he could have said no here, but, you know, you good luck pointing that out to him when you're literally the girl's uncle and you tried to seduce her in a brothel. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have said no. Really? Really, Daemon? I should have said no?
Yeah. But Daemon, I don't think, has any problem being a hypocrite.
Oh, of course. Of course. There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
And now, back to Hot D. Anyway, let's go over to Otto getting a message in the night from the White Worm, or at least the White Worm's messenger, who we should recognize as the little boy who saw Daemon and Rhaenyra in the Pleasure Den.
Do you recall another person in Game of Thrones history that used children as spies?
I do. I can't remember if it was Viserys or Littlefinger.
Varys. You and I both are trying to do.
Sorry,
yeah,
or add,
yeah. No, I understand why it's happening.
Varys.
Varys. That was his little birds. That was his secret communication source that Qyburn later hijacked. Interesting.
Seems like a free cities thing. Seems like a Essos kind of tradition.
Yeah. Interesting.
Varys hails from there.
It makes sense because both Varys and Meseria, from what we know, were used as children. They grow up and they see it as a natural order to use children themselves in various ways. So yeah, that tracks.
And I bet, they justify it by saying, well, better for the children to be used by me, who's going to be
I'm not
going
to cut their cock and balls off and sacrifice to some demon god. I'm just, I'm just cutting their tongue out so they can't tell anything and giving them candy,
Mm-hmm.
it's fucking twisted. It's Game of Thrones.
The next morning, Meseria wakes Daemon with some tea, claiming to be his protector, but the messenger boy that gives her coins is the same one who reported to Otto the previous night.
Yeah.
This should connect the dots, right? It did for me on first watch.
Yeah, I think so. That like these are all, she is the connected to the informant that's working for Otto. And also that she's realized that, we have skipped several years from her perspective forward in time. And she has gone from being a uncommon whore to the mistress of the Prince of Dragonstone to mistress of Whispers for Hire. Like she's trying to find her way. Like, how can I be? Yeah. And she's like, the skin trade can only take me so far. I'm getting political now. Where does she go from here?
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess Daemon was just a stepstone. Like we
especially since her chief patron, Otto, is getting dismissed at the end of this episode.
Yeah. No, she'll have to find.
How well is she going to climb the ladder of chaos?
I mean, let's not forget that Otto still has a daughter who's married to the king, right? Like it's, and the king feels
true.
Like we still, the kingdom and the realm and the king owe you a debt. So,
and can he stay mad at Otto long if Allison's in his ear being like, I clean these boils really good for you and my dad's a good man and he kind of got railroaded, but I don't know. I'm not even joking because again, a lot of this, we're still into where like whole episodes are being based on two or three paragraphs of text. So like, I'm very curious of how they resolve all these issues. Cause like, Otto being dismissed from service is established, that he overstepped his bounds in some of these, in his ambition and his attempts Viserys sends him away. But like, what does the queen think? How does that impact her relationship with Daemon and Rhaenyra? Like a lot of that stuff is, subtext that the book doesn't supply.
Gotcha. But like maybe the Maester, the Grand Maester needs to be next on her list.
cozy up to him. Well, we got to see who the hand, got to see who the hand elections is going to, who's going to take that position.
I really do hope that it's Lord Strong, but we'll see.
We'll see. We will see.
All right. Otto steals himself to tell the king what he's learned about Daemon and Rhaenyra. And when he finally does tell him, the king is irate with him. And Alicent overhears the conversation.
I fucking love this. Like, Viserys trying to draw this, like, just fucking say it, Otto. And Otto being like, well, they were seen in a pleasure house. And Viserys like, so? Like I think that he kind of like his conception of Rhaenyra is like, you know what? She's probably the kind of a gal who'll dress up like a boy and kind of spy things on the pleasure in the pleasure houses of King's Landing. Have you seen the tapestries we surrounded her with? Like, come on, Otto. But like, Otto is just more and more uncomfortable and like not wanting to say the thing that's going to piss off the king, but the king demanding to be pissed off. I thought this was almost dark humor the way, Reese Iphens plays this. So funny.
Targaryen heirs get a dragon egg put in their cradle. Targaryen children just get a tapestry hung above their cradle.
They do. This is we're having to talk when you are a newborn babe and the talk is a tapestry. Mm-hmm. There will be no further questions, you know? But man, there's like when he finally comes like they were coupling and like Viserys just laughs in his face. And says, are you so sick with ambition that you'd have my daughters? Because that's the thing. Like, that's the, this isn't like rumor has gotten back. Like, last night this happened and we fucking know. That is suspicious as shit.
Yeah, I mean, he rightfully points out that he's been spying on Rhaenyra. And Rhys plays this so well. Almost too well in some cases, like so expressionless that I can't honestly tell if he is where his loyalties lie. I can't tell if he is sad that he has to tell his king a thing that he found out, yes, from spying, but he's the hand of the king and he needs to know everything that goes on. And that seems natural to him. I can't tell if he knows that he's done something wrong here or if he doesn't.
And it's the way, and especially since. Because, like, I think it, man, I keep thinking about his brother and how much he was pushing him to do this Aegon thing. But they never played this guy, like, except for maybe getting Alicent into the chambers. That was, like, thing that he was kind of, like, bouncing on his heels and excited about. But, like, when he got this word from the White Worm, he kind of, like, closes his eyes and steals himself.
Yes.
There isn't this kind of, like, yes, fuck, yeah, I got this thing that's going to really. But on the other hand, it's like. I think I saw someone on the subreddit say like Viserys did the wrong math, but came up with the right answer. Like, I don't think Otto is guilty of a lot of things that he's being accused of, but ultimately he is. And from the moment Alicent wed Viserys, he is forever compromised by what's good for the realm and what's good for his house personally. And of course,
and the way they spice it in the post episode interviews is that it was a problem to him that he had to be the one to tell the king this. And it would have been great if he didn't have to tell him that, but he did.
Well, he could have sat on it and waited for room. Cause like you said, many people saw, like you could have, I wonder if Breakbones would have said something like you could have waited a couple days to have, but like you, and that's the thing. It's like, God, I thought he would be a little bit happier because this is something that he's got this hate boner for Daemon. Like, they're chief rivals. They established that from the early goings in the first episode. You'd think he'd have a little bit of glee of like, oh, the king ain't going to like this. And maybe he's not going to like me for telling him, but he's really not going to like Daemon. But he didn't play it that way.
Yeah. I mean, if he waits, though, like, then word gets out and it weakens his claim to the throne. I mean, he's got the queen there.
Does
right?
it? Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I don't know, I don't think Otto wants a civil war to start. Is a thing.
Yeah, he's already, I don't think he's position, a madman, right? Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's got where he wants to get, I think, and like he wants to seal that deal even more if he can, right? Marry, you know, within the family and get closer to the throne. But like, he's already done it, or you know, the only thing that can happen now is his well-laid plans can be ruined.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the calculus is here. I think he's genuinely found out a piece of information that is disturbing to him, that he has to tell the king. He takes no pleasure in it because A, it doesn't serve him, and B, he has to be the one to do it to his face. And that's both a dangerous and a heartbreaking thing for him, because I think he does have affection for the king.
He's such a good mix of Varys and Littlefinger, because Littlefinger absolutely plunged the realm in war got him a minor castle. And Varys, I think the opposite. I think he would do everything he could to keep the realm from bleeding, because his allegiance is kind of for the realm and the small folk in particular. You know, he's always looking after their interests. And I think Otto is somewhere in the middle, where like he's definitely not full on Littlefinger crazy, but he's a little bit more, probably because he's got a cock and balls, a little bit more ambitious than Varys was.
Sure, he is.
You know, he actually has children that he has to care about their standing and position, and the, you know, he's got a brother that's putting the foot on the gas and all that. And what makes the scene extra spicy is Alicent's sitting in the Daemon Targaryen trademark lattice work antechamber of the just hearing the whole thing.
Totally. And then the next morning, Kristen awkwardly brings Rhaenyra a message from the queen. Rhaenyra meets her in the Godswood, where Allison asks her if the rumor is true. She admits to some of it, but denies that Daemon ever touched her. And Allison warns her not to lose her virtue. Oops, too late. It wasn't with Daemon, but it was with Kristen.
Man, it's interesting seeing these girls play at politics, because like Allison is coming, like Allison's coming in with like a head full of the Sans esteem, like self-righteous. I can't believe you did this. And, you know, maybe your uncle goaded you into this, but you are a fool for ever putting yourself in a position where your virtue can even be of doubt, you know. Mm-hmm. And Rhaenyra is responding by being like, you know, actually questioning my virtue is an act of treason. Like they're both like launching these bombs at each other. And, you know, Allison's feeling hurt because in her mind, she architected this dream situation where Rhaenyra can do her duty, but have the choice of any man in this. And was Rhaenyra done spit in her face and, you know, probably fucked her uncle in a King's Landing gutter, you know? And Rhaenyra is like, yo, bro, I've been talking about how much I fucking hate this life and I want to be a knight errant. And you are telling me that I got to be this old man. Like it's both of them kind of like coming out at betrayals from their different positions.
Yeah, I will say this self-righteous, dishonest Rhaenyra is a bad look. It's the first time that I've genuinely disliked her in a scene. I felt like she's made mistakes before. I felt like she's done things that I wouldn't do, but I really didn't like her in this scene.
She's kind of she's kind of unlikable, and that's always going for the put down and the insult versus like she seems like she can't really de-escalate things. They're really priming us for what it's going to look like when she has to take more of a charge in politics. Like, you know, you can see all these chickens are circling around looking for a home to roost in.
Well, it's the first time I think that she's leveled that at someone who I didn't think deserved it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Like every time she's been, you know, a bit too mouthy with somebody, or like gone off and done her own thing in the face of like just thrown all her dad's plans out and botched the whole thing. It's been fun. It's been exciting. This time it feels wrong and I don't like it.
Do you think, the question I was asking, does Rhaenyra count this as a lie, or does she think that she can retreat to some kind of like, well, I literally just refuted the fact that I fucked my uncle, because she said that he never even touched me. Yeah. Which is definitely a lie.
And here's the more important part.
Unless you don't count dry humping because there's clothes between your skin.
Sure.
Yeah, no, he literally didn't. Like, you know, there's at least three layers of fabric between our genitals, but
No, she's swearing to a lie here on the memory of her mother, which if there's a bad portent, like this is the opposite of the white stat or the white heart, right? This is like the negative portent. I just swore on the memory of my dead mother.
Especially since she took so much comfort from her dad doing the same thing, which makes me almost wonder if that weird look she gave him at the end was her thinking, what if this is just a ploy? Like he's going to, you know, like he's going to say this and just, because she did. She just like on my mom.
I think if you reverse the order there, then I would take it that way, perhaps. If he, you know, had sworn to her after she had already sworn a lie on her mother's honor, her mother's memory, then I would think that. But no, I think earlier it was like, oh, wow, okay, he's serious about this. But then it's even more so like, oh my God, what are you doing, Rhaenyra? I think this is just a case of her lying to save her image. And
yeah,
it's a bad look. I don't like anything about her in this scene.
Yeah, and her and Damon should got their story straight, because they're not going to be singing from the same hymn book at all.
Definitely not. Let's talk about that. A very hungover Damon is escorted to a private audience with the king. Viserys accuses him of defiling Rhaenyra. Damon implies that he did and then suggests he marry Rhaenyra to him. Instead, Viserys sends Damon home again, or whatever. As long as he never sees him again. Just go away.
Man, he says, like, he's just kicking him.
Ooh,
in
the
kicked guts.
In the kidneys. Weird. Yeah. That hungover can't feel
after
good.
A whole night of drinking, and God knows what Masseria pumped you full of, and says, your heart's blacker than I even thought. You know, and he he's like, you know, you're a dragon. Who cares what the lords think? Aegon did it. And when he's like, you know, boy, you're no Aegon. Oof.
This is where I'm wondering if, you know, this is part of his plan to make Rhaenyra seem worthless to the other lords, right? Because she's sullied, as they say, so that Viserys will marry her off to him.
Yeah,
it's possible.
Well, and there's also the you know, speaking of the power dynamics and imbalances and all that, I thought it was a great line where, you know, Damon's like, you and I fucked our way through the streets of Silk as younger than her age. And he's like, well, we are both men. It's different, you know, which is a far cry from the like, what of it when he finds out his daughter was cavorting into pleasure houses. I thought that was interesting, too, that, you know, there's like, you know, obviously there's this dual. It's double standard down to our day, let alone medieval fictional Planetos. But
and Rhaenyra is going to point it out later in the episode again. And Viserys is going to be like, yeah, so again,
you think it's a little weak for like, I felt like Viserys is putting Daemon on double secret probation here. Like it's literally the thing that you were sentenced to last time that ended up in you provoking a crisis of state.
Mm-hmm.
And then he fought a war to get over it. And now we're back here and I'm going to do this. I'm just go back to fucking Runestone, to your bronze bitch, and trouble me no more. That felt weak to me.
Super weak. I mean, there's no consequences for Damon. Damon does whatever he wants. And then the king just says, don't do that again.
Right.
And Damon does it again and he keeps getting the same answer. So, why would he change anything? All right, Alicent assures Viserys that Daemon is lying, and Rhaenyra remains a maiden. She does not, but not because of Daemon, at least not directly.
Yeah. Again, Alicent, she's really going to bat 2 episodes in a row for Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. Even though Rhaenyra's put her off on a little thin, spindly branch here.
Yeah. And here's where I'm starting to feel like, maybe they should have ended this episode with the Damon and Kristen situation where, you know, Damon tries to have sex with Rhaenyra and she goes and bangs Cole. I feel like that would have been a great ending, but then they had another outstanding ending coming. So.
Yeah, and I also really like the natural way that, like, Viserys and her are talking through. Because he's like, you know, when he's like, you know, like Viserys, like, why would Daemon tell this lie designed to further infuriate me? Like, why wouldn't he just deny it like Rhaenyra did? And Alicent's wise enough to see, like, because this reduces you. It diminishes you in your own eyes, in the eyes of the realm. Like, it's a victory. Because, goddamn, Alicent is smart when it comes to political calculus. She's got a lot of her father's tutelage and blood in her, it seems.
Sure. And part of me is thinking, you know, does Corlys have anything to do with this, right? Coming back from this joint venture, which was a calculated way of getting back at the king for perceived slights. Is Corlys saying, hey, yeah, go back and fuck with the king while
is he the biggest shitster? Yeah.
While I'm down here doing other things, shoring up, you know, the free cities and getting alliances with them and hoping that the king is too distracted with Daemon shit.
You can see them in their war tents, like chewing on turkey legs and drinking wine and being like, did you hear this shit I heard in King? I heard the auto suggested that Rhaenyra marry her 2-year-old brother. Isn't that fucking wild? You know what, Daemon? You should fucking propose. You should do. I mean, Otto's already put his foot in it. What's it? You know, what is it? Corlys like setting him up for it would be pretty funny. Because I would think that Corlys is capable of this kind of like, you know, what's it hurt? He's already making an alliance with Braavos. He's already got the stepstones, paying back all the coin he lost from his coffers. Like, what's the downside of the play of getting Daemon worked up to go propose to Rhaenyra? Like, sure. He wins no matter what.
And if he does have further things that he's trying to do, keeping the king distracted from dealing with the stuff that he's doing is probably valid.
Yeah,
probably
for sure.
Valuable. All right. Viserys calls Rhaenyra to his chambers to try and impress upon her the importance of her position by showing her the prophetic inscription on his dagger. He also tells her that she'll marry Laenor of Valyrian. She asks what he'll do about his traitorous hand, Otto. He thinks it's fine. Otto's just an ambitious man, in a realm full of ambitious men, but she only agrees to marry Laenor if he deals with Otto.
You made a lot about the Targaryen's fire resistance with this handling of the hot blade.
Made a lot about it. Okay.
Apparently, this is a Valyrian steel dagger with a dragon bone handle.
Okay,
so dragon bones heat resistance gotta be on the scale of like asbestos, right? Which would you let me ask you this, which would you rather cut through without a ventilator, dragon bone or asbestos?
Probably asbestos. I don't know what's in those dragon bones. At least yeah, I know right? what disease I'm getting when I cut through asbestos.
Like, I'm getting a raven every day from the lawyers of Old Town saying, if you've been exposed to dragon dust, you might have caraxiomoma. Yeah. You could be entitled to cash compensation through the Iron Throne. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm not breathing that shit. And like, I think it's super interesting that as, you know, George has his quote unquote bee in his bonnet about a minor succession of Targaryen kings that got fucked up in Game of Thrones and wanting to get that stuff right. But like, he has been the one riding hardest against Targaryens being fireproof. And yet they're constantly flirting with that. Like at three to four episodes, they're flirting with Targaryen fireproof stuff. So not sure what George is playing at here.
Question. Yeah, I don't know. I find it hilarious. This entire episode, every time Viserys thinks he can hold the realm together by making sure Rhaenyra is the heir. Because he doesn't see the fracture coming. And maybe I only see it because I have a little bit of foreknowledge, but the fracture is getting more obvious. And I guess he's just out of touch a bit. He's sort of out of touch with the people. Certainly, I've never seen him interact with them once. I don't think he knows that there are plays going on in the streets that involve the heirs and the battle for the throne already. And what the people's opinion of that is. But even with the lords, I think he's getting a little bit out of touch.
I also like how they handled the like father of a teenager kind of aspect of it, where like he starts in trying to be conciliatory. Like, look, I know I've laid a lot of heavy stuff on you at this prophecy, and I'm trying to groom you to be this head of state. And then she shoots back another, like, he's pre-defending her, and then she shoots back. Plus, I wouldn't be put up with this shit if I was a man. And then he instantly goes into, like, pissed off dad mode. But you're not a man, Rhaenyra, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just really, it's really good, and makes me wonder how their relationship is going to go forward from here. I'm really curious about how many episodes of young Alicent and Rhaenyra we got ahead of ourselves too, because, like, I'm honestly shocked we're almost at the halfway point and we still got the young princess and the queen.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I could go the rest of the season with these actors. I'm because not, they're great,
and the more they layer on these tensions and these old hurts and wounds, the more awesome it's going to be when they finally start getting, you know, mano a mano, dragano dragano. It's going to be cool. And then he's got an ask of her, a demand that, like, look, you got to do your duty, and I'm tired of this farce that you're doing with the Bachelorette show. You're going to fucking marry Laenor, your cousin. Mm-hmm. And then she fires back, fine, I'll do my duty, but you got to do your duty and get rid of this vulture that's sitting on the council. And
so that's what he does. Viserys calls Otto to the small council chamber and removes him as Hand of the King. And he does it in very kingly fashion here. He's got a big speech that he's prepared about, you know, to kind of highlight, you know, where do your loyalties lie? How you started out as a guy that, you know, was boosted to power very rapidly. And
yeah, under suspect conditions.
Yeah. Is he trying to imply that maybe Otto had something to do with the death of his father?
The way I read this is he has been brooding over what Alicent has said. He's been brooding over what Rhaenyra said, and he's been turning over, like, this is, I think, the first. Like, well, I mean, Daemon said it to him and he didn't believe it. Now Rhaenyra is saying, he's turning over. It's like, you know what? My dad, Balon the Brave, writer of the second baddest dragon in the fucking Seven Kingdoms, dies of a burst belly, which is essentially appendicitis. Like, how can someone, okay. I think that's like, it's one of those things. Strong and mighty, and, you know, obviously his dad looms large in his memory because he's a son. How can someone like that be brought low? And then 5 days later, Otto out of nowhere gets elevated to the Hand of the King, mm-hmm. you know, and also this queen that you foisted on me. She was a calculated distraction. And, like, I think you're supposed to understand that, like, half of this stuff is true. Half of this stuff is kind of like JFK style conspiracy nonsense, mm-hmm. but enough of it's
and
true
Viserys
that like
knows that that's not a foregone, that it's not actually completely accurate. Right. He knows that right. there's a split loyalty here, but that's why he has to get Otto away, because the loyalties are split.
Yeah, and the way he tries to do it is like, you know, the crown and the realm owe you a debt. I don't know what that looks like and what that actually means in practice, but I cannot trust your judgment. I don't. Mm-hmm. I wonder what happens to Otto. Are we going to see him brooding in Hightower now? Is he going to find a way to hang around that court? Is he going to team up with Missaria to try to, like, you know, manufacture some scandal to get back in the grace? Like, where does he go from here?
He had a good run.
Yeah,
I like, feel like
it's
he
a good
had a good
run
and he
run.
Got off easy, right? Like,
yeah,
your daughter is now the queen. Your family's your house's future is secure, man. How much further do you want to push this?
Yeah, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
His house is just way more powerful than it was before. So why would you try to continue scheming when you've already landed yourself as close to the throne as anyone could get?
Yeah, he's been, you know, king. He served the old king, he served Viserys. He's been doing this for over a decade, maybe closer to two at this point, and now it's all come to an end. And I do wonder, like, you know, since this guy is a big part of the show, big part of the cast, like, what do they do with him now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming he'll still be out there scheming, looking for more power, as they say.
He's not the type of guy that's going to, like, raise banners. They're not going to go back to Hightower and there's going to be a Hightower rebellion, you know? Because you're right. They are, broadly speaking, they've won far more than they possibly could have thought, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. And then finally, at her father's behest, Rhaenyra is brought some tea to drink before bed, which will, quote, rid her of any unwanted consequences from the previous night's festivities. Plan T, as I'm calling it.
Yeah, moon
this,
tea.
This shows that Viserys doesn't believe her. I mean, you don't send the plan B tea to Rhaenyra here if you believe that she never had relations with Daemon.
I wonder if this is like the old adage with the Soviet missile reduction treaties, trust but verify. Like, I believe that you didn't have sex with Daemon, but we're going to drink the tea so that you don't fuck it up with Laenor, you know, because the only thing that can harsh this is like you showing up to the wedding with a swollen belly, because like, you know, whatever Laenor might personally think about a woman who have sex before marriage, the realm would think a certain thing, and it's just not going to happen.
I mean, that's not trust.
Let me ask you this.
Is not trust. Sorry.
Because here's okay. So the maester leaves the tea on the table and walks off.
Uh-huh.
And Rhaenyra looks at it thoughtfully. What do you think she does?
I think she pours it out the nearest window. I don't think she drinks it.
Do you think Sir Christian is this? How strong is the seed of Sir Christian Soul, the coal?
I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see.
Can his seed storm a uterus as well as it can dehorse a Targaryen? Because if so, and she pours that out the window, we might have some trouble. We got some trouble. Yeah. We got a baseborn git in the heir of the throne's womb here. I don't know.
Let's complicate this, man. Why not? I mean, that's more exciting. So yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right.
Tea out the window, baby in the belly. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's all bastards all the time here in House of Dragon from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out in the weeks ahead.
Let me ask you this.
Oh, you got something to propound to me. Okay.
One last thing. It's not possible this is the same tea that Allison's drinking before bed, right? She's not trying to prevent any future heirs.
I don't think she's copping a Cersei, because Cersei had elaborate tactics to make sure she never had Robert's children. I don't think so. No, I think she's drinking. She's just drinking mom wine.
All right. That's it.
Mom's drinking wine because the babies are crying. You know that old saying.
Sure.
And that will do it for House of the Dragon. The hot D is being cooled off for just a few days because we're going to come roaring back with the feedback episode in a couple days. Hot D@baldmove.com is how you contribute to that. Of course, you can follow us along over on twitter.com/baldmove. That's the best way to find out everything that we're releasing because, you know, we're also engaged in another minor fantasy property you might have heard of, the Rings of Power. We got our buddies, the Lorehounds, helping us out on there, just like Maester Anthony is helping us out with some of the lore stuff on the House of the Dragon stuff. Double Dragon, Maester Anthony's take on increasingly not just House of the Dragon, but also Rings of Power. You're getting double your Double Dragon. It'll be out later this week as well. And of course, Sunday, the night, the big event, we'll be watching episode 5 and talking with it with our club members live, and they can interact with us. If you want to get in on those instant takes and instant talks, check out the club, support.baldmove.com. All right. We'll be back again in a couple days with feedback. Hot D@baldmove.com for that. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.